Disposable Heroes, Episode 12. Here's what's going to go down. Lou joins the band and instantly finds himself in debt. We talk about growing up in Long Island during what some would consider the peak of the emo slash pop punk scene. How his work as a session drummer ended up getting him the gig with New Politics. And how the song Back That Ass Up by Juvenile has contributed to his career. Enjoy. All right. What's going on, everyone? This is another episode of Disposable Heroes, your, my, and Mitch's favorite drum podcast. Today we have, and we are very thankful to our boy Lou Vecchio from New Politics. How are you, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
So you are reporting in from the East Coast right now, right?
Correct. Brooklyn, New York.
Nice. Hey, well, first off, I just want to thank you for being on the podcast, man. That's awesome, and we're real stoked to have you.
Oh, man. Thanks for... I'm flattered that you'd even want me to be on the show, dude. This is awesome. This is great.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the beauty of social media, right? Because just to tell everyone, I think it was right after me and Maddie from the Dirty Heads did our podcast, me and you linked up on a direct message on Instagram, and you hit me up and told me that. I was like... Nah, you got to be kidding. Like, no, we'd be honored to have you on. So, so stoked. And that's how it led us here. And we've kind of been, you and me have been like, I think due to Maddie, have been one degree of separation because we played shows together. I've seen you guys and I've seen you ripping and we've just never really hung. So let's do this, brother.
I know, man. I that's how I felt too. It's awesome. I'm pumped, man.
Yeah,
it's good
for sure.
Good to actually get this going, man. It's great.
For sure. So where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Long Island, New York. Okay. I grew up in a little town called Farmingdale. It's like not too far, like 45 minutes east of Manhattan. And I grew up there. I grew up in like the local music scene, doing drums out there, and you know, very, when I was growing up, it was like the emo pop punk world, so that's like that's where I come from, that's like my background,
like real quick, we've got a Mitch, aka Mitch Army Knife, my all around one of my favorite humans on the earth here, and he'll be chiming in from now and again. Say hi, Mitch.
Hey, what's up?
So that's what we actually kind of maybe refer to as a bit of the Fueled by Ramen era.
Yes. That's perfect. Exactly. You know, I get, you know, from all those bands, Long Island had that like specific little, you know, scene. They had like, you know, Taking Back Sunday and Brand New and, you know, that whole world. And that's kind of like, you know, where I started, you know, I mean, I've listened to music my whole life, but that's like really how I started getting into like playing live and stuff like that was.
Right. And with that, like Thursday, would they fit into that whole scene too?
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Movie life.
Yeah. Movie life. Definitely movie life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, cause this is like to me and I don't know, Mitch, probably to you too. It's like, this is what I came up on is like the Warped Tour scene, you know, it's like yes. through the, you know, first acquaintances with like direct contact with the Warped Tour in 2001 ish. That's kind of that whole groundwork was being laid for all that kind of music. So where did you like at first kind of inject yourself into that coming from Long Island?
Well, I kind of played like we had like these little venues, like just like random venues like around, you know, the island. And there's this really, really cool spot. It used to be called the Downtown. I don't know if you guys went through there at some point, but that was like the mecca of like all of these bands, like on tour, like they would come through, you know, from where I was from, they would come through there. And that venue started doing like open mic nights. So me and this this band that I was playing with at the time called The Unlikely Heroes. We started doing this open mic night, like every Tuesday night. And we were there. You would play two songs to nobody, you know, but like one time we did it and that, you know, there was happened to be like a manager, some sort of manager in the crowd and, you know, got us going. And we started, you know, doing like, you know, weekend tours and stuff like that. And that's really how I got into like, you know, playing drums. I mean, I playing drums out. I come from a family of my dad and my grandfather are both also drummers, not touring musicians, but they played drums their entire lives. So I was born, you know, I always had drums around me and music since I was, you know, since I could remember.
Oh, so your whole family, huh? That's kind of an interesting thing when the whole family comes from one kind of world and then you follow the same suit. Cause like me, it was my dad playing guitar and I ended up playing drums. It was weird.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. For a while, that's so funny you said that. Cause for a while, like when I was in high school, I was like, you know, my little, like, you know, rebellious, whatever stage I was like, you know, I was like, I don't want to play drums. It's not cool to play drums, you know? I played everything from like, I tried playing like trombone to like, you know, and I like was skating all the time and like even break dancing at points, you know, anything to like get me away from like, to like shy away from the drums. Cause my dad was like, you know, he loved it. You know, it's just that whole thing. And then I finally came to my, you know, my senses and I was like, no, I love this and I want to do this forever.
That's so funny. I guess that's with any true like love relationship, you go away from it and then you end up coming back to it. You know, you're like, okay, this is meant to be. Cause I guess mine was similar too. Cause I started playing drums super young and then started surfing in Hawaii and all that. And then eventually came back to it just like you're talking about.
Yeah, totally, man. It's like, and that's good. I feel like, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it's good too. Cause I think a lot of people don't necessarily maybe let that kind of thing happen, you know, because it's like some people are like, nah, I tried this already, like whatever. But it's good when I guess you can, I don't know, this is of course subjective, but you know, when you can hear something from the universe and you're like, oh, rad, I hear that. Let's do this, you know?
Totally, 100%. Absolutely.
So back in those days when you, jumping back to the playing the local from the open mic night and all that. So that was just you and your buddy, you said?
It was, yeah, me and three of my friends who had started this band a while ago. Like, and yeah, I mean, I actually like got a call from a random dude, like at the time that I didn't know that had, I don't know where he, I was, I think actually, I know I'm bouncing around a lot now.
No, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I did like a Guitar Center holds like those drum off things, like that Guitar Center drum off. And I did one of those. I entered one, I believe. And this friend of a friend happened to see me play and got my information somehow and called me to join this band, Unlikely Heroes, which I then joined the band. And, you know, and that's like, that's how we started doing this open mic thing together. We wrote a couple, you know, a bunch of songs and recorded a record and stuff like that. And that's how I really met these guys. And, you know, I was in a band with those dudes since, I mean, like high school until I got my like first like paying like touring, you know, hired tour guy gig, which I mean, we did it forever. I mean, it was like almost 6 years. I feel like we were a band, like just doing it on our own, no label and, you know, no support, just like going out in our like mom's, you know, SUVs and like touring the East Coast.
Right. You know? Right. So awesome. I love how so many stories start with that. And that it's, I mean, you know, you can relate that story to, I think any, like I have a good buddy, in the, UFC, Clay Guida, that he just won his fight actually. Yeah. Clay, you're the man. And he kind of had the same thing. It's just, it's the grassroots, DIY, whatever you want to call it thing is just, it's such, I don't know. And I think you can agree. It's just fun, especially when you're involved in it. It's just such a fun thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm being like, I don't know, I'm probably being biased just because I come from kind of the same kind of jump in a van RV kind of world. But yeah, I don't know. I just think it's so fun and going, seeing every step of the way and whatnot and all that is just a blast. I guess all the building blocks, you know, seeing all those being put up of whether it be oneself or a group effort is just awesome.
Yeah, especially, you know, exactly what you said. I mean, not only is it's like the, you know, it's fun. And of course, it's, you know, I'm biased as well because a lot of people, you know, don't really get the option, the chance to travel the world and see things with other people. But it's like, especially when you're in a situation like that, you know, and everybody is, you know, everyone's putting the same amount of work in and getting the same, you know, it's all about for that, you know, 45 minutes or whatever it is, that half an hour that you're on stage, and you're all getting the same joy back. And that's, you know, and it's like, you're not looking for anything else but that smile, that excitement at that moment. So it's definitely like something that it's like something you can't really explain to people, you know, in a way that's like, it's just a feeling.
No, and it is, it's like anything with that. I think there's certain parts of like surfing or anything that you can't really put into words, and being on stage and playing music is definitely one of those, you know. It's got a bit of a levitating vibe to it.
Totally.
So back in the spirit of jumping around, you know, what you got going right now, obviously, you know, you are the heartbeat behind, New Politics. And what do you guys got going on right now?
We just finished up, you know, we released our first single, One of Us. It's still on the chart. I think it's still on the radio. We're going with another single coming up soon. That record's out. We released it in October. Great, man, you know, and we're gearing up for some new stuff coming up next year. We haven't really announced anything yet, so it's still, you know, in the works, in the pot. But yeah, man, we're doing a bunch of festival stuff coming up. I think we're in Jacksonville and Buffalo on the 30th, doing like, you know, the radio, the holiday festivals and stuff like that. So, man, we're just happy to be playing and keep going, you know. And
how long have you been jamming with the band?
It's been since 2011, I feel like. So what's that, like seven years?
Yeah, oh man, it is 7 years. That is so crazy.
That's wild to think.
I know, time just whew, flying by. And so the band is originally from Copenhagen.
Yes.
How did that link happen? How did the overseas link happen with you and the boys?
Honestly, man, completely random. So before I met New Politics and after the band that we were just talking about that I was in, I, you know, started working, you know, as a hired drummer for like multiple, you know, different artists, and I ended up on the road with who's now one of my best friends, my buddy Mikey. He's a videographer. Okay. And he was on tour with me. This really crazy. I ended up opening. I was playing for this girl, this artist, and we were the opening act for the Justin Bieber My World tour. Okay. And I met him, and that was like way back. But I met him on that tour, and the next tour he ended up on was New Politics' first tour in the States ever, when they brought another drummer over from Denmark. And you know, we had just parted ways on the Bieber tour, being like, you know, vice versa. Like, hey, if you hear of anything, you know how you know, you got to network and to get to gigs and
the community, you know, man, it's the community.
Exactly. We had just parted ways, being like, if you hear anything, let me know, blah, blah, blah. Same thing. And, I think it was like, maybe, I don't even think it was like a month after I left that tour ended. I mean, I was still like working at restaurants. I was, to be honest, I was serving tables at Chili's on Long Island, you know, in between gigs to like make money.
Yeah.
And I got a phone call on my shift from my buddy Mikey, and he was like, hey, I'm on tour with, you know, two Danish guys. Do you want to join a band? And I was like, what's Danish? Where's Denmark?
Yeah. You know, like, did he really just come out and straight up say that? Like, I'm on tour with two Danish dudes, man. You want to hit this up?
he literally actually said something like, yeah, I even think it might have been like, do you want to join a band with two Danish guys?
What a legend. I want to meet this guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a really good buddy of mine. And honestly, I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, absolutely. And I left the shift that day. David, my lead, you know, lead singer in New Politics, called me and was like, you know, we need a video of, you know, just to like make sure you can actually play drums, like, you know, play play one of these songs and play one of our songs, and then pick a song of your choice that you, you know, want to play and just send it to us. So I played. I had someone video me like in my basement with like flip cam when it was like a thing.
Yeah.
And it was the song Yeah Yeah Yeah, uh-huh, which is on the first album. And then I still don't know why to this day I chose this song, but I played along to Juvenile Back That Ass Up.
Oh, and I said, sick.
Yeah. And I sent it in hoping like I got the audition and like got the part. And then, you know, they called me back the next day and they were like, yeah, definitely. And it was funny because.
And don't get me like, I'm sorry to interject, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's some heavy hi-hat work in that song, isn't there?
Yeah, totally, man. And that's I think I love it, dude. I love it.
That's so like, well, all that, a lot of that, like, what is that? That's kind of like the Southern hip hop, right? Has just that heavy hi-hat going.
Yeah, dude, like super closed, like tight, fast hi-hat.
Yep, totally. So sorry about, go on.
No, it's all good, man. But yeah, and that's what I did. And it made me laugh, you know, I'll never, because they were so, they were like, it came across that they were like really nervous. I guess like I don't know what the situation was with the old drummer, but like Soren, the guitar player, who's also like the brain child behind New Politics, like he does like all the programming and a lot of the computer stuff that we use on stage and stuff like that.
He's also a hell of a guitar thrower too.
Yeah, exactly. he's got that strength, you know, that Viking strength.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like really polite and he has like a heavy accent and he's like, you know, he's like, can you play to a click? And I was like, and like asking me all these questions on, and I was like, yeah, man, I promise you I could play to a click. Let's just go, like, just have me come and play, you know? But yeah. I ended up in at some rehearsal room with them in the city in Manhattan. And it just clicked, man. You know, like when you know, I knew it was, I know this is going to sound real cheesy, but I knew right off the bat, like when I, you know, cause I've been into 1,000 auditions and I've been to, you know, in rehearsal rooms with a lot of artists at this point. Yeah. And I knew as soon as I sat down with them and there was a chemistry there, even though we didn't really know each other, there was just a different kind of vibe.
Totally.
And, you know, and I was like, yeah, this is it. And I, the first tour I did with them was with Dirty Heads. That was the first tour. And that's when I met. Yeah. We were opening up for them, or direct support. I can't remember. It was one or the other, but that's how I met those dudes. And we've been friends, like, you know, I mean, those guys are just like the best dudes in the world.
Yeah, of course. So rad. Love the Dirty Heads. Always a huge shout out to those boys.
Yeah, I love those guys. Maddie's the man. I mean, me and Maddie talk a lot. So, and I'm sure you guys, you know, that was awesome. He's such a good dude.
Well, I remember, Maddie, why I didn't meet you, actually, probably one of the reasons yet was because Maddie was filling in for you. For a show that our bands played together out in the Redlands, because I think you were at a wedding or something was happening. I remember.
Yeah, it was like my I think it was like my best friend's, or maybe it was a family member's, but I don't know. It was something that was really actually really messed up because I really shouldn't have missed the show, but I couldn't get out of this. I was like a part of the wedding.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get out of it. And I remember telling the guys and being like, look, I promise you this will be the only time this happens, but if I can't, like, if I really can't make it, like, I'm going to find the best drummer that could sit in, you know? And that was like, Maddie was the first person that I was like, dude, please do this for me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny because, we talked to Maddie on his episode and, you know, guys like Josh Freeze have hit him up to fill in for them as well. So I think you did a good job with your replacement, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so back to a little bit of, like you're saying how, guitar player's name was
Soren.
So Soren, when Soren was asking you if you played to a click, that was basically, cause there's no bass player, right? That was the main objective of that question. I'm kind of guessing, or no.
Yeah. Well, everything that we do on stage, because it's a three piece, you know, we play to grid. So
yeah,
we have a very like extensive, elaborate Ableton rig. That I'm sure you're familiar with Ableton and stuff like that. That basically we record, you know, ourselves, bass or whatever other instrumentation that we fill in on stage, and I'm controlling that computer with like a sustain pedal, like a MIDI trigger pedal, basically that's next to me on stage. So that once I hit that pedal in between songs, that's when the click, you know, I get like an 8-bar count in, and then the song starts.
Right.
So unless we build like, you know, we build like loops now, and it's a whole, it's a crazy thing. He was asking me that.
What if I'm just so interested in this. That's why. What if something happens like in the middle? Do you have a kill switch if say like you're playing to 20,000 people and the craziest sing along or something just you don't want to stop is happening? Do you have some kind of a like that you could like a kill switch in the middle of a breakdown or something, that something like that's happening, that you could extend it another 8 bars, or you got to stick with the grid and go from point A to point B?
For the most part, we build the track system so that it is a set, like if you want to go off and extend it. But yeah, the way it works is like, so like we know certain songs, obviously, you know, like you said, sing-alongs, for example.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
we know
course.
That there's going to be a sing-along at the end of the song, I'll just have like a never-ending click track loop at the end of the song.
Gotcha.
Where we can, you know what I'm saying? And it'll just go and go and go until we feel like I can stop it. But you're right, I don't have a kill switch per se. My drum tech is always side stage standing by the track rig, and he, God forbid, if there's a meltdown or something, or if you know, I don't know, numerous times, like if something really bad happens,
yeah,
he has the kill switch. And we also have a backup system, two laptops, so like it, and they run together. So if one system crashes, the other system will pick it up like flawlessly, and you would never like that. Oh. We would never even know. It's crazy.
Sick.
It's a whole like real nerdy, like, you know, insane world. And again, that's like Soren is, he's done things that like people at Ableton are like, how did you do this? Like, we didn't even write this into like the program, you know.
God,
it's crazy.
Yeah. The Dutch man, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
that's so funny. So you have one backup, and is there, do you remember any, has there been any like meltdown that's happened where you've kind of, cause I mean, trust me, like as us, we're fly by the seat of your pants kind of thing. And we've had so many meltdowns on stage, but you know, most of them not noticed probably, but
by
anyone but ourselves. But have you had any like mishaps with that, the computer thing, where you're like, uh-oh, technology's backfiring on us, guys?
Yeah, a couple of times. I mean, there was really only like two or three massive, like not even massive, but like things where like we had to just like stop the show. And
yeah,
luckily, you know, David, our singer, is like, he's a dancer, he's a break dancer. So when that if that does happen, I just play a beat and he'll just dance while we're fixing, like when we were fixing
Epic.
The track stuff,
Epic.
which worked for us, you know. But there was a few times when we first started, I remember we were doing like, I think it was like it was a college show. And it was small. It might have been with 21 Pilots, when, like a long, long time ago.
Right.
And we were playing, and the crowd was going nuts. And at this time, the track rig was living on like right next to me, like on my drum riser, like literally like to the left of my elbow. And some kid at right before we just started Harlem, like the song Harlem, our song Harlem.
Yeah.
And some kid threw his beanie up in the air. And it landed on the laptop and hit spacebar and stopped the tracks like right when we were going into the first verse of the song.
A beanie. He might as well have thrown a feather up there.
I know.
What?
We were just like,
great.
Both turned around, like everyone was like, all right, what do we do now? And this is before we had like a, you know, we didn't have a crew or anything. It was like four of us like in advance. So we were one dude was like just scrambling around trying to figure it out. And I looked at the laptop and I'm like, dude, it just hit stop. Like, we just got to start it over.
Yeah,
again.
I know. Yeah. It's like some, I love it when you hit that point, you're like, okay, there's no other way except to just stop and start again, guys.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, and it's so funny you say that of the breakdancing, cause I knew that about your singer. Cause I saw you guys years ago at the Troubadour.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm pretty sure you were in the band, because it was after 2011. It was probably, it was probably like 4 or 5-ish years ago or something like that.
Cool. Yeah, was it with, we might have been with Neon Tree. I know, I think I remember, yeah.
Yeah, you guys were headlining.
Yeah, it might have been like our first, yeah.
Yeah, we were, because it was right on the, we were on an island at the time, and, couple of the peeps from Island were there, and I went and checked you guys out, and damn, he rips it at breakdancing.
Yeah, he's nasty, man. He's insane.
Yeah, nasty breakdancing. So yeah, that's a crazy, huh? Dutch breakdancer. All right.
yeah. Who would have thought, right?
So what's let's talk about more about your like background with drumming and stuff like that, and what, you know, like your favorite drummers what you play SJC drums, right?
I did for a while, but SJC. Yeah, I'm with.
So what do you got now?
Now I'm playing a company called Masters of Maple.
Oh, yeah. We know Sahir.
Yeah, Sahir. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah.
He's super cool, man. Great drums. They sound great. This is actually the first. This summer, we went out with 311, and that was the first tour that I used the kit on. And it was, I mean, I love it. It's phenomenal. He built me like this insane, like crazy, you know, giant drums with this awesome, like weird finish. I love it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, it's funny, actually, speaking of Island Records, he came in and did a couple of songs on our record that was our self-titled record that we put out on Island. So kind of a little full circle right there.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. He's the man. He's such a good dude.
And then, what kind of cymbals are you playing right now?
I'm playing Zildjian's currently right now.
Nice.
You know, just A Customs and you know, stuff like that. I mean, I have K hi hats and I just put a new ride up for this tour. My tech recommended it, and it's been really awesome. I can't remember. It's not a ping ride, but it's something in between a ping and a like a crash ride. I forgot the name of it, but it's insane. It's like 23. It's
sweet ride.
It might be the sweet. Yeah, it is a sweet ride. That's what it is. It's a 23 inch sweet ride.
Yeah, I think I think I rocked one of those for a second because I think it's one of the only ones they make in a 23 inch that they make that big.
Exactly. Yeah, because I had a 20. I think a custom. Or I know don't the K's make like a 24? They have like a giant.
Yeah, they might. That's the one that Mitch, every time I talk about it, he looks at me like, come on, man, you're crazy. You don't need that big of a cymbal.
Exactly.
Mainly, though, because it doesn't fit in his cymbal bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if they make a cymbal bag for that. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I've been using. I kind of like, you know, I kind of bounce around a lot with like the stuff that I play, and it's solely because no other reason other than like I just get like I know it's gonna sound really bad, but I get bored really quick. Uh-huh. And I want to try everything. I want to, like, you know, give everything a taste, you know. And so, like, you know, I played Sabian for a while, which I also love, you know. And uh-huh. But yeah, right now I'm using the Zildjian's. I've always been with Vic Firth is like a, I love the sticks. I can't go wrong. 5B Extremes. That's like my shit right there.
Oh yeah, I love it. We got it. Yeah, Vic Firth. All right, big shout out to Ben and Joe. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that how it happened? From like when you're playing SJC and you're like, I kind of want to try something else. Let's see what else is out there, kind of vibe.
Yeah, I mean, well, again, to be honest, and it sounds like I'm like the, you know, the whore of like endorsements.
Yeah, but yeah,
like,
no.
I went from SJC, which again makes great drums. I mean, Mike and Brian at the time, they were great to me, and they did, you know, everything. And I got a call from, you know, Fender. Soren plays everything. He's endorsed by Fender,
right?
And Billy over at Fender is also a good buddy of ours. He was like, yo, the Gretsch guys want to talk to you. At the time, this is when Gretsch and Fender were like a company, you know, I think Fender owned Gretsch.
Right, right.
And they offered me like a great deal. And I remember being like, wow, this is Gretsch. Like, this is awesome. This is like a big giant company and blah, blah, blah. And like, before I even made any decision, I talked to the guy, you know, because me and the SJC dudes were like homies at this point, like, you know, just how we're talking, like, this is how I would talk to them.
Totally.
And I called them, and, you know, I told them what was up, and they were just like, you know, it's gonna suck to see you go, man, but that's huge. Like, it's Gretsch. Like, we completely understand, you know, like, we'll never not lose your, you know, we'll never not support you. And, you know, and it was like a good like tie, you know. So they kind of like, you know, guided me over to them, and I went to Gretsch. And then to be honest with you, I was there for like, I would say a year. And I kind of, and I know I might shoot myself in the foot for this, but I regretted instantly making that decision, only because, like, with the bigger companies like that, you know, and me and actually Sire just talked about this like not too long ago, like with the bigger companies like that, I feel like unless you're like a, you know, like a bigger artist, sometimes you just get like swallowed and like, oh, forgotten. Totally.
Yeah. I mean, that's like an analogy for any big company in the world. And, or I guess, for a small fish in such a big pond like that, it's like, unfortunately, greed and things like that, for to put it real bluntly, get in the way. Like one thing, like, just to interject real quick, so that's so great about Vic Firth is There's no like favoritism in a company like that or whatnot. So yeah, it's rad to see when it's like that, but I see what you're talking about on the other edge of the sword.
Yeah, you know, and that's like where I made the mistake, and it has nothing to do with their drums or anything like that. I mean, it's Gretsch, you know, they make a great, they've always, you know, made drums forever. But, yeah, I just felt like, you know, like for me, it's like with the drum, with the endorsements and you know, stuff that I play first and foremost, like, I feel like I have to, like, you know, I like to believe in what I stand behind, you know, like, and what I really want to stand behind the product and, you know, something that I love. And then I expect, you know, and I know this is going to sounds like, you know, cheesy, but like just a little bit back would be nice. You know, like I might even ask me for like free stuff or whatever, just like some support. And, you know, it's nice to just like throw your name in like a, you know, catalog, you know, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. And in this day and age with social media and everything, it's, in my opinion, it's so easy for companies to do that. And the ones that like kind of don't take advantage of spreading their wings wide in that aspect, I don't see why you wouldn't do that. It seems like with the way the world is structured these days, it's like win-win for everybody in that sense, especially like you're saying, we're talking about people that are flying the flags for the companies, you know?
Totally, man. And that's how I felt about, you know, being with Gretsch. And, you know, I got a little sour about it, you know, because it was like at the time, you know, what I couldn't understand, it's like, I don't get me wrong, like I get, like, you have these, you know, huge, huge, huge artists on your roster. But like, it's like, dude, like we, at that point, like New Politics was, I mean, we did 300 days in a year.
Totally.
It's like, what, you know, wouldn't you want to like, you know, push this right now? Like what's in people's faces, you know? And they just,
And as an example, you're not doing bars either. You're like just to like, I guess for lack of a better term, put wind in your sails. You're on tour with some legit bands. You're headlining your own legit venues. It's like, it blows my mind that sometimes, just using your case as an example, that that companies turn a blind eye to things like that. You know, it's like,
yeah, totally. It's like, I just didn't understand it. You know,
Where's the logic? You know,
exactly. Exactly, man. And I just got frustrated, and you know, it wasn't like a bad thing, but then Sair hit me up like out of nowhere. And I think it was because we had a connection through like the Walk the Moon dudes and AWOL Nation got, and we had just like knew a bunch of people like through from touring and stuff like that. And I had like freaked out over one of his snare drums that I had heard on stage. And I was like, what is that? You know, blah, blah. And they told me that it was master. So I guess I got back to him somehow. And he just like hit me up and we just chatted. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Why not? Like I love the drums. They sound great. And that's what I've been with like masters. I think we're approaching a year, I think.
Oh, rad. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And that's what, you recorded the last stuff on?
Masters. It was mostly the masters kit, but it was a lot of, like, there was a couple of like, you know, vintage, you know how it is in the studio, like vintage, I think like a lot of vintage Ludwigs, but actually the majority of it was the master's kit, a lot of the snare drum, because that thing is just like a beast.
So rad. So let's go to something that we both have in common as well. Touring with 311, how rad is that?
Oh, dude, it was like a dream come true this summer. It was insane, man.
I know, because we first toured with them because Nick produced like half of our No Shame album that came out in 2007. So they took us on, I think it was their 2006 tour, and like same thing, and just like, oh, wow. I'm like literally thinking to myself, I just went from listening to these guys' CDs in my car to on tour. I'm on tour with them now, man. Even though there was like there's a 10-year gap in between that, but still.
right.
Yeah.
No, dude, it's amazing.
Such rad dudes and such a, I mean, how rad is it to watch Chad Sexton just absolutely shred every night?
Unbelievable, man. I told the guys, look, like, don't judge me. I'm going to be a complete fanboy of this tour. Like, I will be side stage whenever I can watching you play. And he was like super, Chad was, I mean, he's like the nicest dude ever, man. And just so every time we talked about, you know, just like, I love like, you know, geeking out about drums and stuff with him. And it was like, it was rad, man. It was a really, really, really fun tour. Super easygoing guys to deal with, you know, because tour could get nuts after a while. But we did the whole summer and it was like a vacation, man. It was super awesome.
Yeah, because the rest was like it was your direct support for the whole tour, and then the couple bands split up the, or a few bands split up the opening spot.
Yeah, they had like, there was like maybe like three bands that came in and out, which were also great bands. It was just an awesome tour, especially for us, because we kind of were like, New Politics are kind of like the oddball of the like tour, you know, because it was like, you know, 311, you know, kind of like we're a little bit out of like the scene of what was going on.
Right.
And we were nervous, you know, we were nervous about that. But I mean, to top everything off, like, you know, the 311's fans were so like welcoming and like open to listening to, you know, like it was amazing. Like I was expecting to walk out and just be like, and just, you know, no one was really going to get it, you know, what we were doing and whatever. But because I'm a worst case scenario guy. I always go to the worst case scenario.
Totally.
But like they totally loved us, man. And it was so flattering and so shocking. Like, you know, because some of their fans have been following this band for like years, dude. Like, you know, like talking about years upon years upon years.
Oh, the excitable ones aren't fucking around, man.
No, they're like, no joke, dude. And for these guys to come, I mean, I saw these dudes like in front, like barricade every single night at every single show. And like, eventually it got to like where, you know, our fans that would show up, these are like, you know, we played like our fans are like young, you know, anywhere between like 16 and like, you know, 23 year old girls is mainly like, you know, our fan base.
Right.
So these girls are like trying to like come through to like all, you know, all these like 311 fans.
Right.
And then it was so nice to like watch these guy, like these bigger dudes, like in the front, like go ahead, I'm sorry, you can stand up front for like New Politics, and like that's like the level of like how cool it got, you know, like it was awesome.
I could possibly get crucified at some point by saying this, but it's like the excitable ones are the good version of the Juggalos, and I say that because they're so diehard about 311. Except they have open minds too. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas we toured with Cottonmouth Kings back in the day in like 2004, and we got awesome. We got drinks thrown at us, people yelling at us, and then we turned around and we'd look, and they'd all have painted faces like ICP. So we'd be like, oh, these Juggalo guys, I don't think they're too into the old pepper Hawaiian dub rock. So, and the exact opposite of that is what you're talking about, these fans and letting in what I'm going to dub as the future MILFs of America, New Politics fans, and letting that and letting everyone enjoy, which is what music is all about, is a release and a togetherness of people, you know? So,
yeah, man, it was a beautiful thing to see, and it was super cool. And you know, it was just cool. It just felt good to like gain the respect and the love of these people, you know, these fans, and that love, because I'm a fan of 311 too. It's like one of the first albums I bought, you know, like, you know, and I remember trying to play along to and be like, you know, how's he doing those ghost notes? I got to learn that right now.
I know. Seriously, like go him and his left hand is insane.
It's wild, man. It's wild.
I'm going to go back to what you're saying when you sent in your first video of playing the Juvenile song What was it? Back That Ass Up?
Back That Ass Up,
God,
yeah.
Fuck yeah. And you took that with just a little flip camera, everything. How crazy is all the, like, I guess, like internet famous drummers that do the same thing and just absolutely shred like no other? And in the flip side, you can see how they're doing all these crazy ghost notes and everything.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It blows me away. I mean, some of these like young cats that are coming up that are just like destroying, and you know, like, and they have the following to go along with it. I mean, millions of followers, and you know, and some of these dudes don't even like, they're not even in like, you know, bands that are killing it. They're just like on their own, just like playing drums on the internet. I mean, I think it's cool. It's kind of like, it's a little bit beyond me. Like I it's not beyond me, but like, I'm just like, how it's hard to understand. But I guess that really, it just proves that this total power in the internet, and anybody can do it now. If you have a laptop and, you know, like, in, you know, a little bit of equipment, you can do what these guys are doing, man. And if you're good, you're good, you know?
And it's funny, cause it's like, it's like this like onion or whatever that keeps on like, whatever you want to call it, unfolding, or like, I just heard what you said. And I remember that same statement maybe 10 years ago of like, oh, you know, if you have a laptop, you can record your own album and do it on your own. Now it's like, if you have a laptop and a phone and Instagram and have the right, like know a bit about maybe some algorithms and this and that, you can make a career without even a band.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going insane. Like, first we don't need the producer. Now we don't need the band. We just, yeah. Like, what's next?
Right. It's kind of crazy. And there's a part, there's like, and I would probably group you in with this, but there's a part of you that like, and me, myself, that like kind of wants to hate a little bit, but then you can't because it's like, they're actually really good at what they're doing. You know, right. There's like a talent there, you know, like, and it's like, I mean, you know, when it first started happening with the whole computer stuff, I will admit, I will be the first, I was the first person that was like, you know, this is crazy. This is taken away from like all the hours that I put into practicing and all the years that I put into being on the road and blah, 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 blah. But then as it like, you know, because computers and technology is so incorporated in my band now,
yeah,
that it's like, you know, it's like I learned a lot about it and I don't feel the same way anymore, you know, but it is a whole other world, man. It's crazy to think. Like my father, he says this to me all the time and he's like, you know, and he's like real like Italian, Long Island. You know, he's like, you know, Lou, if I had the Facebook back in the day when I was coming up, I'd be a millionaire.
Yeah.
And he tells me this all the time, and I'm just like, you know, Dad, you're probably right. You're probably right.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy because it seems like the internet and everything, it's as if it's like shrinking the world in a sense.
Because
everything is just like so much more literally. I mean, we all have $1,000 computers that we walk around with in our pockets, so everything's like literally at a finger's reach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. It's crazy. It's a totally different world. I mean, do you remember you know, playing shows and back in the, like, you know, I don't even know how long ago, but like, remember mailing lists, like handing out like a clipboard and like having people fill out like their like email, like anything like that, like their information, like that doesn't even, that's crazy to think that like that was the thing.
You know,
I remember,
you know what my, sorry, real quick, but my main one was, my question with those are, because we had it at our merch booths and everything for Warped Tour, was should I rip off the pages that are filled out already and put them away, or should we leave them there so it looks cool that we have like a bunch of people that were
exactly
And there's definitely, there's like other versions of that now with like the, I guess like the internet, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, should I erase the early part of my feed on Instagram or something like that or whatever. It's funny because it's like these same thoughts and same kind of practices over and over again. And it's weird to see them apply, I guess, to different things. And going back to what you're saying, you know, how when the internet first came about, and you know, of course, like some big change like that, you're like, well, what's going on? A threat to the integrity, I guess, is what I could maybe categorize it as. Where you're like, all these hours of practicing, all this time on the road, this and that. There's kind of, which I've been thinking about nowadays, there's the next level to it where bands spend so much time rehearsing. I mean, you're in the middle of it, and planning a show, spending money to rent production, all this stuff. And then, you know, there, however many fans pay money to come see this awesome show that they put on and they enjoy the shit out of it. And then they take these videos that just sound like absolute shit right next to the speakers. And then they post them on all their Instagrams and end up on discovery pages and all these people maybe that haven't heard of Pepper, heard of any band, New Politics that it is, hear it and immediately dismiss them because they can't hear it.
Right.
It's like, that's kind of a weird thing to think about, I guess. And it's been kind of hitting my mind because I have a friend that they came to our show and tested this new technology called Audzilla that is a real-time app that takes a video and kind of fixes the sound or whatever, so you can post it on your social media. So, but I don't know. What's your thoughts on all the people? Do you think it's better that at least people are hearing it out there, even though it just sounds like a fart in their phone? Or do you think the consequences outweigh the benefits?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. That is wild with YouTube and stuff. And I don't know, man. I think that's a really good question, because I don't know, because I find myself, you know, when you get like lost in YouTube and you're just like watching videos for like hours, and
yeah.
I can tell you that as a musician and as someone, you know, that makes music, and like I always I purposely will try to find the highest quality video to right. watch of a live band, and I would like to think that that's because my ears, you know, just because I need to hear things a certain way. I don't know as like a regular listener, like just like a listener, like a normal listener. Like for instance, my girlfriend, like, you know, I when she's listening to YouTube, I don't know if she's like, this sounds like crap, unless it's like actually like real bad crap. But right. you know what I mean? But I know what you're saying, because it almost takes away from like, you know, it is, it's totally different. Like if you're listening, if you're right, like if someone's filming right in front of the PA and you're just like, all you hear is this static, and you know, you're not listening to the band, you know, you're not getting that experience at all. And it does, I never really thought about that, man. I gotta be honest with you. You caught me off guard here. I never thought about like the fact that like, you know, you're spending money for this production and everything, even visually, you know,
yeah,
and you know, how people are viewing that live, and then it goes onto the internet and it gets dumped onto this, like, you know, this big giant open thing, and it looks and sounds like crap. Like, how does that go against, you know, make the band look? And you're right. That kind of sucks. I never thought about that.
I think, like, I mean, I don't know what my opinion is yet. I'm kind of reserving it, because I think I want to err on the side of as long as they're talking is better than
it's good.
Than not talking at all kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Where I think when when the internet and downloading music and Napster and everything and all that broke out, and everyone's like, oh, we're recording a new album, we gotta like, we're gonna release it, and we need to make sure like no one. I all as well erred on the side of, hey, as long as people are listening to the music, then I think the victory is won. You know, it the benefits outweigh the consequences, which I think I still err on this side of it. But yeah, it's an interesting one. It's definitely an interesting one,
because
I think when you talk about, because I think about my girlfriend, and I think she would, if she can't really, if something's incoherent in a sense, it's just going to mm-hmm. be like skip. You know what, Mitch? You as a engineer, because Mitch recorded our last record, and he comes from a studio background where, and we brought him on the live. Brought him into the live world, I guess you could say. So what's awesome. Your opinion on that thing, on that, Mitch?
It's funny you actually mentioned this. I turned off a live video yesterday because it was so bad. It was so blown out.
Right.
Like I listened for 2 seconds and then done. I killed it. Right. I stopped watching.
Right.
Because it was just like, you know, just nonsense.
Right.
That just, it was subs. And I was like, okay, cool. That's not the video for me right now. I'll watch something else. But yeah, I think in the terms of what Lou's saying, I definitely look for videos that are of high quality.
Right. And you look for views. You're like, oh, this one's got a million views. It's got to be semi-decent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I think listening to something that actually is of quality makes the experience just way more better. I still think we put, and YouTube in particular, puts does a little bit of a disservice by making, you know, because when it comes to audio and video in encoding and making sure it's streamable, they kill the audio first, and so that bums me out already.
Oh wow!
Because the video visually, it's easier for your eyes to see a shitload of pixels than for your ears to hear the like degradation in audio quality,
right?
Because it's being streamed. So I'm already annoyed by that.
Right.
But then you hear like just...
Well, it's interesting to see that the two, I think, we talk about our girlfriends and then Mitch being on the absolute other side of that extreme. Sonically. And then me and you, Lou, kind of being in the middle of that.
Yeah.
But our girlfriends and Mitch's opinion are a little closer in a sense where they're like, instantly like kind of, oh, I'm over this.
Yeah, totally.
So that's kind of interesting to see that tie together, but...
It's a crazy
thing to definitely here. Because funny story, actually, Mitch, I'm going to talk about to comment on an engineer's ear. We went to see, what was it, Incubus? I think it was, Mitch.
Yeah. It was Incubus.
In Cleveland, we had a night off of, we were on tour, I think, with Sublime with Rome and Revolution and us. And we had a night off, went to see him. And I'm a huge Incubus fan. So I threw in my earplugs and I was having one of the greatest times ever. And, and Mitch was rolling around, you know, he's just kind of like, oh man, and I agreed, it did sound weird. So that's to put in perspective of like, you're getting that kind of a opinion coming from an engineer like Mitch, and then the polar opposite, you know what I mean, and us sitting right in the middle. But at the end of the day, it's like, it'll be awesome for everything, I guess, technology to catch up with itself, but it seems like it'll be a never ending, like Fat Bastard said, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly, man. It really is. I don't think it'll ever end at this point.
I know, it's crazy, man. I mean, I just got the new iPhone, and I'm like a caveman looking at this thing. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here, man?
Yeah, there's like no buttons on it and stuff.
Yeah, wild. Yeah, exactly. So let's go back then to another tour. When you were touring with the Dirty Heads.
Yeah.
What year was that?
I think it was like 2011 into 2012 or the very beginning of 2012.
Okay. So that was like right as they had the, Lay Me Down was like still kind of new on the, semi-new on the radio.
Yeah. That's when it was like slaying. They were slaying it with Lay Me Down on the radio. That was the first tour I did with them, and I came on with New Politics as a like originally as a hired guy. Like they're you know, it was paid guy to be out with them for the first run, because they didn't, you know, they weren't sure, you know, just like kind of like a trial period. And then on the road with on tour with Dirty Heads, and I remember like having conversations with Maddie about this at, you know, at a certain point, and being like, you know, what's your situation with, you know, like going back and forth.
Yeah.
And like
very similar.
Exactly. And, you know, had conversations, and then Dave, we were playing pool one day, me and David and Soren, and, at a venue somewhere. And he was like, yo, do you want to join the band? And I was like, what do you mean? I'm in the band. What are you talking about? And he was like, no. Do you want to like join the band, like be a part, a third member of the band? And I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, absolutely. And then I joined the band, got off the tour, did all the signing and stuff like that, and started at that point. We started working on Harlem, which wasn't, you know, obviously wasn't out yet. We started writing that record.
Yeah.
And during that writing, like during the first 3 months we were home, everything was great. You know, I was, you know, it was like, you know, making money with the band and stuff like that. And then I get a phone call from like our business manager, and he's like, okay, well, I just deposited X amount of dollars. This is going to be the last money you see from New Politics for a very long time. And I was like, what? I thought I just joined a band, and we were like, you know, going to be great. We were going. But the band had like basically ran out of money like while we were writing this album. And I just joined, and I was like, what the hell? And like the guy, David and Soren, didn't even like tell me this. Like, the, you know, I was like, what's going on? And then you know, from that point on,
Harlem's your guys' biggest song to date, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, it wasn't written yet.
No. this is like the opposite of the Rob Trujillo Metallica story. You want to join the band? Yeah, okay, you're in debt now.
Yeah, exactly.
Which actually also involved a Dutch man, Lars, when it wasn't him saying, here's $1 million. It was, you're in debt now. But obviously that all worked out, man. I love it.
Right. Yeah, man. It was crazy. I was scared for a second, you know, and I kind of went back. The guys were like, yeah, you know, whenever, you know, we'll do the studio stuff. And then if you need to take some other gigs during this, like to make up for it, you know, whatever. But I did some stuff, and then, you know, I made my way. We worked it out, man. I mean, it was rough for a while, but then as soon as that album was written and finished, we just toured, and we got out on the road. It was originally booked as like a month and a half tour. Opening, we were with 21 Pilots at the time. This is way back when, you know, before anything was going on with them. And, you know, we were kind of like neck and neck on alternative charts.
Uh-huh.
And that month turned into like 2 months with them, turned into like 3 months. And we ended up, we were out for like 6 months on this tour with them. And then, you know, Harlem just like went to the top. I didn't even realize, you know, because once you're in it, you're not really like
especially when you're on the, especially when you're on the road, man. It's like,
oh yeah, you know. Yeah. And we were in like van and trailer. This is like back van and trailer, you know what I mean? Like right. Sprinter. Like we were all. I was driving. I'm the only one in the band that had a license. You know, these guys are from Denmark, where they ride like bicycles around all day long.
Ring ring.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I'm sharing the driving with like the two crew guys we had out with us. So it was crazy, man. It was a crazy experience. And then all of a sudden it just, you know, it just like, it seems like you blink your eye and then you're like, oh my God, now we're in a bus, you know, now we're in a bus. It's crazy. You know,
I know it's crazy. Cause like, I mean, similar thing when, Give It Up for Us, hit on K-Rock in 2005, I think we're in Florida in a van and a trailer, and same thing, like Brett's sister calling, like, wow, yeah, they're playing your guys' song like every hour on K-Rock. You're like, wait, what? And then, and then it all, like you said, we're like, oh, wow, everything's like kind of changed now. What a trip.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's just like, it's wild. Like, we didn't even hear the song on the radio for I think it was K-Rock actually that the first time we heard Harlem on the radio was in LA. We were driving through like the Grapevine, I think it was, like some show, and I thought someone's iPod was on. iPod, that's how long ago this was. Yeah. I thought someone's iPod was playing through the van. I was like, why is this on? I don't want to hear this right now. And they were like, no, it's the radio, dude. And I heard I think it was like Stryker that was on the air. I heard his voice. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah, Stryker. Big up, Stryker. Yeah, yeah. That's so rad. Like ours was kind of so. It was Jed the Fish played us on like his catch of the day or whatever it is, and that was like the initial match or whatever. Do you think that kind of thing has the same effect nowadays? Like having quote unquote a hit on K-Rock for a brand new or not brand new band, but for a band that is first hitting that plateau of success. Do you think it's as valuable now with things like Spotify and, you know, you get we have a record label as well. And we just got a couple bands, Catastro and Dare Nots and the Supervillains on a couple big playlists and on Spotify. And that's like the hugest victory because there's hundreds of thousands of people. Like, do you think the terrestrial radio has as much of a effect with all things like Spotify and whatnot and the playlists?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, me and the guys talk about this a lot, and you know, I mean, you can't like completely take away radio, and you know, radio has done everything for our band,
right? And it's obviously still valuable because I really think all those fair quote unquote what I would call fair weather music fans, the end all be all for them is the radio.
Totally. And that's, you're 100% right about that. And I don't necessarily know if that'll ever go away, but I will tell you, I do think that Spotify and, you know, all these other streaming services and like it's slowly, and not even slowly, it's happening. Like that's really what matters now. And I think that like that has converted from radio to that now, you know, and I mean, exactly what you said, like people are paying money to like get onto these playlists, like certain playlists, like, you know, like, and that's what's mattering. And streams even, you know, streams count now as like record as sales.
Yeah.
So
totally.
It's like, which is insane. That's crazy. You know? So, I mean, I wouldn't say like there are people out there that say like, you know, radio is a dying industry and a lot of like, you know, stuff like that. But I still believe that, you know, I don't think radio will ever be dead, but I do think that the youth of today is not, you know, like listening to the radio the way that they used to, or the way that I used to, you know. It's like, it's all done on your phones or your laptops now. And that's kind of crazy. It's like all new formats and stuff, you know?
I know. It's amazing. Where do you mainly get all your new music from?
Mainly from Spotify, from the internet. Definitely. I'm one of those guys, you know. I live in New York in the city, you know, I live with my, you know, earbuds in, and that's like, there's no radio here, you know? So it's like, that's what, whenever I'm walking around, you know, cause I don't, you know, one drives here.
So, and you're a Spotify guy, not Apple Music?
Yeah, I'm a Spotify guy. I had Apple Music for a while, Honestly, for no reason. I don't really know why I chose Spotify over that. There was no like definitive reason. I just knew the Spotify format better than that. And I guess I didn't feel like learning something.
Yeah,
you know, learn.
What about you, Mitch? I know Mitch over here. He's like got subscriptions to every one, I think.
Yeah, I have all three.
What's your favorite out of the streaming?
Where
do you get? I'm sorry, I'll ask you the same question as Lou. Where do you get most of your new music from?
Most of it from iTunes or from Apple Music, but I definitely prefer the interface for Spotify better.
Yeah,
there's a few things I like about each. One of the things I really like about Apple Music is you can use Siri with it. You can just say, "Hey Siri, play." Give It Up by Pepper. You know, and it will.
Thanks for the plug.
And it'll play it. You can't do that with.
So
that's like one of my favorite things.
I know what you mean about the Spotify interface, though. And Lou, that's what you're talking about, right? You're like, you just same thing with me. I have a really good friend that works for Pandora, and he hooked me up with the beta for Pandora Premium a while ago, and I've been using that, and it's like, you know how it is when you got a buddy and you're like, oh man, but at the end of the day, the Spotify interface is just so user-friendly, and with their codes they have these days, and like, it's pretty, you just know there's someone in that office really forward-thinking with like the way people are getting music these days.
Did you ever hear of Groove Shark? I just found out about Groove Shark.
Oh, I do remember Groove Shark.
Yeah, I've heard of Groove Shark too. Yeah, yeah.
It's a crazy story.
What was it? Because I remember, being a band, I remember, like, I don't know if it was our management at the time or whatever, being like, oh, we need to start a Groove Shark account.
And yeah, it was a streaming service prior to Spotify that was started in, oddly enough, you'll love this, in Gainesville.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Shout out to Less Than Jake, yeah, Vinny.
We had an interview with Less Than Jake with Vinny, and Gainesville is just king of music, apparently, somehow,
that
in Florida.
That is so funny. Yeah. Groove Shark, too, of course,
but
it's called.
It failed because they didn't, they worked almost kind of like
file sharing?
Yeah, exactly. It was file sharing based. So users would upload songs and you could download them and stream them. But it started out kind of like a paid version, and then it went to free, and they didn't secure any of the rights for the music, and so all the labels came down on them.
Yeah,
and lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, and they tried to like hold on as long as possible, and there was like two sides to the company. One side wanted to just partner with the labels, and the other side was like, no, we're not partnering, and they ended up going under. And then, like, I think like 6 months later, Spotify was released in the United States.
Oh, they probably
and they did the exact opposite of Groove Shark. Groove Shark used all their funding for like promotion and advertising, and Spotify used all their funding to secure the rights, so that they could legally do it.
So basically, Spotify built a library instead of Groove Shark. It almost like sounded like a bootleg site to me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
here we can trade bootlegs to each other.
And I think that's why management wanted people to have like a setup with them, but account with them, but yeah, no, it failed pretty badly. Like they ended up going out of business.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
That's
though.
Crazy.
I just found out about them recently. So I'm curious I want to know if people actually used it.
Put it this way. It's like a guy in a band. It's like, it just came and went you know what I mean? And, I don't think, and I don't know if Lou, you could probably say the same thing. I haven't thought about it. And since the whole like came and gone, like, oh, let's start an account. Okay.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, cause I remember talking to the guys too and being like, we need to start this account, or like someone in management was like, you guys need to start a Groove Shark account. I'm pretty sure we had one started, you know, I remember it like that for sure.
Wow. That's just crazy to think of how many things are in between the things that stick, like Spotify, you know what I mean? A Groove Shark. I mean, all even like a rap. What's Rhapsody now? Or
oh like, man, is that even still, is that a thing?
Right? Wasn't or and what's the other one that our buddy Rob would always have? Not All Music, but
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a bunch, and it's just interesting.
Rhapsody. I remember Rhapsody.
Yeah, Rhapsody was definitely.
Do you guys remember Winamp?
Oh, dude, I was just going to say that. I used to love one. That's so funny you said that.
Yeah, what was it? It really kicks the llama's ass, something like that. Yeah, right? Win-if.
That's oh my. So funny you said that, man. You could like change out the skins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And was that, and that was like an after LimeWire kind of like?
No, it was the player that you used to play the MP3s that you downloaded from Napster.
The legal MP3s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. It was like solely based for your computer.
I remember downloading songs before I left for school.
Yeah.
And then like I'd be like, cool, I can't listen to this right now, but I'm gonna go to school, and when I get back, it's gonna be downloaded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, dude, I remember, go ahead.
No, it's so weird because I was thinking too, like, and it brings you back because I remember, like, for whatever reason, I had. Do you guys remember mini disc players?
Oh yeah, we recorded like some great shows on mini disc players, actually.
Yeah, dude. I mean, and to think about, like, you have to like put the song on mini disc in real time. Like, you have to like let it play like for like 4 minutes, and then that's how you can like have it on the disc.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That's crazy to think about. That was like, you know, like it just it blows my mind to think about that. Where like, dude, you know, now it's.
I would take CDs, and then my parents had an old
like laser disc
cassette to cassette. Oh. And because I had a portable CD player, but when I went snowboarding, they didn't have the anti-skip yet.
Yeah.
So I would make tapes. I'd make playlists on the tape. So when I went snowboarding, I could listen to music and it wouldn't skip because the tape wouldn't skip.
Yeah, that is a crap. Yeah. That is some crafty nerd shit right there. I like
hey,
it.
Man. I mean, awesome. All signs pointed to nerd when I was a kid. That's all I could say.
That's amazing. And more spirit of jumping around. So let's talk more about Long Island.
Yeah.
Because I have a really good friend that's from Rockaway Beach, actually.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
Yeah, Pat Conlon. He'll be ecstatic that I mentioned him on my podcast, too. But, shout out to his bar. He's just opening a bar, Epstein's, by the beach. It used to be in the city, but, Long Island is it's so rad. One of my favorite places in Long Island is Huntington and the Paramount Theater.
Oh, dude, so such a beautiful theater. Yeah, it's right? I grew up – yeah, it's gorgeous, man. I grew up like not too far from there, like maybe like 10 minutes away from there. So before the Paramount was there, like that used to, that used to be another, like an older venue.
Okay. Such a rad town, man. Huntington. It's so,
it's so cool, dude. It's so cool.
The people, that main street that it's on. I mean, I could just sit there forever and it's just like some places just give you a good feeling inside.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool spot. That's where it's like where I started the tattoo shop where I started getting tattooed is like right on that street right there. So I spent a lot of time over there, like just, you know, getting tattooed and hanging out. But yeah, man, when we came back on this the tour before this one, we played, we were doing a co-headline with Andrew McMahon and in the Wilderness, and we played the Paramount, and it was such a surreal moment for me because it was like, you know, hometown and Long Island. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun. It was great.
That's so rad. It's just I think that's maybe almost like the epitome of a perfect full circle, like coming back to an amazing place like that, your hometown, and what gratitude and a feeling of fulfillment, huh?
Yeah, it was great, man. It was great. It was just honestly for me, I'm like, you know, I'm a big family person, big friends and you know, they have my heart, and just to see how excited like my family and my friends were, like from, you know, home, and it was awesome. It was almost overwhelming for a moment, but it was really, it was rad. It was great.
No, totally. We're going to wrap it up here, I think. But one last thing though, I was going to say is, yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about and the Long Island and even, you know, friends I have from the East Coast, it's such that family vibe that reminds me of Hawaii where, you know, I mean, your ohana, your family is everything. And it reminds me of, we just played Red Rocks and my auntie lives in Colorado now. And I couldn't even look at her during the show cause she's up there and she's like bursting in tears pretty much. Yeah. Cause she's so happy. Yeah. She's just, and I'm like, oh God, I'm going to start crying if I look at you. Cause it's like, but tears of joy, of course, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mitch was doing, he was right next to, or she was right next to Mitch cause he was doing front of house obviously at the
Dude,
time.
She was, She was a proud auntie. That's all I can say. Real proud auntie.
So
that's amazing. That's amazing.
Anyway, Lou. Well, hey, seriously, man, I can't tell you enough how grateful we are to have you on the show, man. Really, had a blast talking to you.
Likewise, man. Thank you again for having me.
I think I said it before how everyone should start a podcast because it's a good excuse to talk to your friends, but it's also a good excuse to make epic new friends, man. It's a pleasure.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Definitely. Likewise.
We got to come to a show. This is great.
Yeah, exactly. Like Mitch just said, when you guys get out here and, or even, you know how it is when you travel a lot, we might end up crossing paths maybe outside of Southern California. But as soon as we do, me and Mitch, we're going to come out and see you shred, brother.
Oh yeah, dude, please. And also when we come, we're going to be through LA coming soon. So I'll keep you posted and you guys are more than welcome to come out. I'd love to hang.
Last thing we want to do here is we want to give a shout out to your drum tech. What was your drum tech's name again?
Oh man, we call him Doty, but his name is, that's his last name. Matt Doty. He's the man.
Matt Doty. You are the man, brother.
Yeah. Full shout out.
Full shout out. And then full also, what's your socials and the band's socials and all that good stuff.
My personal social is Instagram, Lou Politics. Twitter is Louis Vecchio. New Politics is New Politics Rock on Instagram and Facebook. And then Twitter is just New Politics.
Epic, brother. Awesome. Hey, well, many mahalos. And thank everyone out there for joining us of this amazing story that we just were talking with our boy Lou.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, all right, and we'll talk to you soon. Hoorah!
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Disposable Heroes. Also, a big thank you to Lou Vecchio for coming on. Check out New Politics in a City Near You beginning February 18th. For dates, head to newpolitics.dk. We will be back in 2 weeks, so in the meantime, head to iTunes and listen to previous episodes you might have missed, or leave us a review. Either way, we appreciate it.